everybody, to episode 114, people. The Brothership, the two best friends you didn't know you had. Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry. My man, BR from Ambler, PA. What's shaking?
The excellence in broadcasting, Jeff, as you say.
Truly, that is what they call us.
Between the three of us right here, we're like Run DMC, which would, I guess that
would. I would say we're more like Rush.
You're going to go with Rush. All right. I was going to give Lou the Jam Master J tag.
Who's going to be? I guess that makes him Neil. You know, and you know, I'll be Getty, and
and I'm the other guy, Alex Lifeson. All right,
exactly, because you can already hear the people going, "You didn't know who Alex Lifeson was." So anyway, folks, I'm going to give a little prep before we start our usual interaction. This has a chance to be the dirtiest episode as far as content goes in the history of this fine podcast. So I have pre-warned a certain radio broadcaster from the New York area by the name of Benji Fido that his young son, Antonio, who plays a part in this episode, by the way, and I will discuss that in a minute, but there are portions of this show that Antonio, I'm sorry, should not listen to. They're not for the youth, Barry. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah, this is definitely more of an adult. But we will say, Jeff, isn't the irony of this episode – didn't Antonio choose our match of the
Antonio
week?
Antonio picked this week's match. You are correct, sir.
Well, I love
a good irony.
Yeah, exactly. That should be interesting. But yes, this match is a fantastic match. We want to thank Antonio and his father, Benji, for selecting this match. At the same time, Antonio, this should be the only part of the show that you listen to this week.
Yes, because there's going to be a little raw dog on some of the other portions of the broadcast. Today, we're going to do a couple interesting things. First of all, we're going to address a post that was featured on our Facebook group, Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry. I will go into more details on that in a second. We are going to be having a little segment with our friend Rick Nathan, another guy in the group, who knew Rick Nathan, Hollywood celeb.
Hollywood celebrity, Jeff, and as I see it, our ticket to the big time. This will be the guy to get us our own TV show.
I can already feel my ego growing, my request for financial remuneration growing. So, Rick, we're hoping you can hook us up, buddy. We are going to be looking at this week's match of the week, which is the Royal Rumble from 1992. Took place January 19th, 1992 in Albany, New York at the beautiful Knickerbocker Arena. I'm sure Barry has been there. And after that is all done, the closing, the go home, if you will, Barry, for our show this week, Barry, Lou, and I are going to play a little adult trivia. Wait till we get to that part, Barry. I know you can't wait.
Oh, yeah, too. And a little bit of a preview here. I don't know a whole lot of what the questions are going into this segment. But, yeah, this is Benji. I'm not even sure you should be listening to this segment. It's that hardcore.
Well, I'm sure your daughter Zoe is a regular listener of this show. And so you're going to want to warn her to stay away. So a couple things before we start into the main segment. Barry, you know, we were talking, by the way, who knew we were going to create such a shitstorm last week with your choice on new wave bands, Barry?
It's and I see just, you know, we are recording this on a Monday afternoon. So the show is going to be dropping in a little less than 8 hours. But Ron Gardner just posted something about his new wave, I guess what he's listening to on Spotify or one of those services. And it's a great selection of new wave songs. And I was tempted to say something, but I just know somebody's going to sneak in there and say, that's not new wave, that's ska. That's not new wave, that's rock and roll. So it is a shitstorm. It's a controversy that demands not having a controversy first off. But at the end of the day, new wave encompasses so many different genres of music. And when a song came out 35 to 40 years ago, it wasn't considered new wave. New wave didn't technically even exist. So we look back at it in hindsight, and you might say Duran Duran isn't new wave or Talking Heads aren't. History has placed them in this catalog of new wave artists. So in my opinion, Jeff, they are new wave. You can ask historians, you can ask people in the know. The band themselves, they may not consider themselves new wave, but people who wrote about them, they certainly do.
I just thought it was really hilarious how absolutely adamant certain people were, without going into any names of people that don't need to be mentioned here on a weekly basis. But it's like, no, man, you're completely wrong about it. Jeez Louise, people, it's just a freaking topic. Don't get so overpassionate about it. And by the way, Barry, you know, one thing that a band I don't think we did mention that kind of parlays into a little news of a personal nature here for your favorite host, Haircut 100. You didn't mention them, Barry. Yeah.
Love them. Yeah. Well, but Jeff, if I ask you a question, how many Haircut 100 songs can you name?
Well, I wasn't so much going into Haircut 100. Thank you for that. Perhaps there was something else that happened in my life recently that we want to break kayfabe on, Barry.
Oh.
Oh, you see that segue, my friend? Did you see that segue?
Jeff, we always say you are the master of segues. We'll get back to Haircut 100, but let's stay on topic. That was, and in about 30 seconds, everyone's going to realize why. Greatest segue in the history of the business, Jeff.
Thank you so much. Yes, a little personal news coming out of the Booker's household is I recently went, and I'll be posting photos. I went into the barber and said, give me the Barry Rose. Yes, we are now two bald and beautiful hosts here on Breaking Kayfabe with Bowden and Barry.
We took the plunge. How about Lou? Lou, how much hair? Because I've only seen the, I guess you do have a full head of hair though, right, Lou?
Oh, if only. I've got more of the Little John or Friar Tuck thing going. It's been a struggle. And my wife looks at me and talks to my head and says, please stay for a little while with the hair. So I've been dancing around the idea of doing the Lord Barron's Patrick Stewart horseshoe thing. And now that Booker Man has done it, that may hasten my decision.
Yeah, it's as I said to Jeff when Jeff texted me. Jeff did this several days ago, but actually wanted to wait for this episode to break the news.
I wanted to wait for the publicity to fully hit. You know,
absolutely, and you absolutely should. But when I saw the photo, my first thought was wow. And then when I was able to pick myself up off the floor, it was, Jeff, your life is going to be so much easier. There is an advantage to not having a lot of hair on top of your head. And that is called in and out of the shower quickly. You don't have to do anything. Nothing has to be done. It's another reason I also grew a beard. I don't have to do shit anymore. I could go take a 30-second shower. Life is great. No hair, beard's there. Well, I'm shaving now.
I told my wife the other day, you know what I did for the first time, honey? And she goes, what? I go, I washed my head.
There you go.
And she promptly took the shampoo and conditioner out of the shower stall. So we don't have to worry about that. Now, enough of that trivial stuff.
Well, here's the question, though, Jeff. Okay, what? Interesting point right there. I have had this hairstyle now where I shave it, and I'm generally a one on the wall because I do it myself, and wall is the electric clippers, and I'm either a one. Yep. Or I'm down to a zero. Like I just go all the way down. I still shampoo my head on a daily basis, though.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you keeping the nubs conditioned there, are you?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. What do you do, though? Are you just soaping up the top of your head?
Well, that's what I'm doing currently. I plan on, what I did was I went for the, as they say, the two at the barber. And when she did it, at first I went in, quite frankly, I went in and said, give me the high and tight. Now, this had been a plan going back to before I retired. The hair was thinning. I was, you know, I didn't want to be that guy. You know, I didn't want to be the guy with, you know, the layer and then the comb over and then the layer over that. No, my 11th grade math teacher was like that. And I didn't want to have that look. Shout out to you, Dixon Ragsdale. But anyway, so
Dixon Ragsdale,
my geometry teacher at Belleville East High School.
You
thank
can't
you very
make
much.
That shit up.
Yeah, you know, he's a great guy. So there's like three people out that listen to the show that are going to pop for the Dixon Ragsdale. Trust me. But the hair was thinning and, you know, I was doing the comb back and I was waking up every morning and I was kind of looking like Bernie Sanders, not to get political on the show because we don't do that. But, you know, when Bernie's hair gets wild at the events, that's what I didn't want. And that's what it looked like, started to look like when I was waking up. So I said, you know, I don't want this. So I speak into the wife. The wife, she was a go. She said, you know, whatever you want to do. So let me do it right after we move. Then it was like, let me wait and do it after we go to the fan fest. Then let me wait and do it after Thanksgiving. And so finally, once Thanksgiving came and went, I said, nope, it's time. I'm going to go. I didn't tell my wife that I was going. And so then I went to the barber and I came back. And when I got there, I told the barber, I said, give me the high and tight, you know, like a crew cut. And she's like, nah, I got to be honest with you. I really don't think that's going to look that good on you. I think you'll be better just taking it down, giving it a two. And so I said, okay. So she did the two. I started doing it. And I was just like, once it was done, and it was funny because the guy that lives next door to me here in the lovely suburb of Cumming, Georgia, happened to be at the barber that day. And he kind of walked by and he kind of laughed. And he said, I guess you decided to go for it, huh? And I said, yeah, absolutely. It's been a long time coming. And the funniest part of it was when I told my wife, she was, you know, oh, it looks good. And then I sent a video to my parents. My parents had no idea I was going to do it. And so I you know, sent it to my mom and she called me back. I said, hey, mom, I haven't been this weight since I was born. And she says, well, no, actually, you had a full head of hair when you were born. So, yeah, you can't even go by that. So yeah, it's a new experience, nice. You know, enjoying life. Freshly shorn. I'm actually going back on Wednesday to get the – but Barry, this brings up a whole other topic. I don't want to get too deep into this, but have you ever been shaved at a barber? Had them do the shaving?
You're talking my head or –
well, no, I'm talking like a beard, you know, anything like that.
Yeah, so I think I did get the beard when I had a goatee, which years ago as well. I think I got that trimmed, but this also brings up, so I've never had my head shaved by a barber, but I have straight razored, which I think Zaha does, but I've straight razored my head maybe a dozen times, something like that.
Wow. So I will be looking for advice from those other members of our group that are of the bald palate, you know, or bald plate, whatever you want to say there. You know, the people that groom the head afterwards. So I have the full stone cold Steve Austin look, you know, with the I don't know if I want to get the tan on the head like he's got. I'm kind of jealous of that. But anyway, before we go on, I want to mention a couple things that are not of a fun nature, like my head is currently. By the way, it gets really cold when I go outside now, Barry. I wasn't used to that. So we found out a couple of one or two sad notes. We found out the friend of the show, Bobby Fulton, who has been on this show before, discussing his match with the Midnight Express. We found out some very sad news that Bobby Fulton, I believe, has, I don't know if it's throat cancer or esophageal cancer, but we certainly want to send our best wishes and good thoughts out to Bobby Fulton.
He's a great guy, too. He was really friendly when he was on our show, and it was kind of a last-minute thing when we got him on, and I've communicated with Bobby a couple of times, and, you know, Bobby's one of those guys. He's to some degree outspoken about his political or religious beliefs on Facebook, and I don't always agree with him, but he handles himself so sincere, a really, truly, you know, we say he's a good guy. Bobby really is a good guy. So this sucks to hear, but he's got so many people in his corner, and as he posted, somebody said, will you be starting a GoFundMe? And Bobby said, I don't need to. I have insurance. I'm in good shape. And that's also indicative of Bobby's character, you know? So our fingers are crossed he's going to be able to beat this.
Yeah, so we're in your corner, Bobby. You kick cancer's ass, and we're hoping good things for you. Also, of course, yesterday we realized was the anniversary of the death, the murder, if you will, of John Lennon. You know, Barry, one of the things you and I were talking about as we were, you know, thinking about that, you had posted where you were when you found out about John Lennon's death. Why don't you share that with our listeners?
Yeah, so I had, as much as I'm not a fan of the Police, currently in early 80s.
How about
so
the Beatles? Because that was his band.
That was. Yeah, I liked the Beatles. You know, I was never a huge Beatles guy. It's not a knock either. I just, you know, I think I connect more with Flock of Seagulls and Haircut 100, Jeff, than I do the Beatles. But I was seeing the Police in concert with my old friend Kenny Casper at Sunrise Musical Theater. It was a Monday night. And we got out somewhere between 10 and 11 o'clock, and we got in the car, and we turned on – it was either She or Zeta 4, which were the two rock stations in South Florida at that time. And there was a female DJ that was on, and her name escapes me because I knew this. I knew who it'll come to me when I don't think of it, of course. But she was crying. And she said, John Lennon had been shot. We have gotten the news now that he is dead. And she was crying, and they didn't pull her off air. They kept her on air as she's having essentially a breakdown. They went straight into playing all Beatles music. And for us, it was you're leaving the Police concert, which is very uplifting, very upbeat. And all of a sudden, you're immediately down. So, Jeff, as you know, having been to the Sunrise Musical Theater, the traffic on the way out is a fucking nightmare. And it was literally like one lane in and one lane out. So we're sitting in traffic. I think it was 90 minutes until I got home. And it was one of the worst car rides because every, you know, all the life had just been sucked out of you. It was huge news, obviously.
Yeah, I like a lot of people, got my news of the event from Howard Cosell on Monday Night Football. And we all remember, I think Lou's going to play for us that sound clip right now of Howard Cosell announcing John Lennon's death.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival. Hard to go back to the game after that news flash, which in duty bound we had to take. Frank?
And so, you know, when you hear that, Barry, it's, you know, you're just so devastated. But, you know, more than the night that it happened, what I can remember is the after effect, the day after, when just, oh my God, just so many thousands of people overwhelming the Dakota building where he lived and where the event took place, overwhelming Central Park. And, you know, I hate to say the mob, but that's what it was. The mob of crying, hysterical people, you know, somebody that had been such a part of it. And the only thing I can really compare it to for people of our general age group is when Elvis died, the way that people reacted and just went to Graceland in droves. And, you know, I don't know that anyone's death that I can think of in the music industry now would have that sort of impact, because, you know, if we lose like somebody like Mick Jagger or Paul McCartney at this point, you know, these are guys that have lived a long life. And the fact that John Lennon had just released an album, I mean, like maybe like 5 weeks before he released Double Fantasy. And, you know, the fact that he was becoming relevant again in the music industry after that 5-year hiatus, it was such a, you know, shock. And I mean to tell you, you went to the newsstands or a bookstore, there were literally 50 magazines about the Beatles, about John Lennon's life, about his murder. Every newspaper that had that headline was a collector's item. It was crazy.
Yeah, and I think the difference, too, obviously it was a senseless and tragic murder. But if a guy like Paul McCartney was to pass away right now, and this is, you know, or Mick Jagger, these are guys who are in their mid to late 70s that, and if they're ill, there's probably going to be some sort of news leaking out that they're ill. So I don't want to say the expectation of death is there, because that wouldn't be fair or accurate. But at the same time, there is the hint that, hey, this person maybe is seriously ill. Anything could happen. And their age as well. You know, John Lennon was a young guy. He had, just as you said, released that album within just a couple of weeks. And this was a brutal, senseless murder. So I think it really affected people. I think the David Bowie death, again, there were three deaths that I've referenced numerous times, because they were all fairly close to each other. But it was Prince, Tom Petty, and David Bowie. And I think all three caught us off guard. You know, I know Prince did. Prince 100%, I think, caught us off guard. Petty went on for a couple of days, if I remember correctly, where they said he was ill and something had happened. And then there was the report that he was dead. He wasn't dead. And David Bowie kind of caught us off guard as all, you know, because he had cancer and they really hadn't announced that beforehand. So these, you know, the Beatles, they've got to be the most iconic rock and rollers in the history of music. You know, love them, hate them, or otherwise, they have to be. The Beatles that's the standard bearer. It's the Beatles. So I think, you know, the fact that the first Beatle died and died again, it was a useless, tragic death. You know, it was a murder by somebody who's psychotic. I think it really had an impact on the world. And you said something too, and you were absolutely correct, 100% correct. It was the mob of people that showed up to the Dakota and then to Central Park. And it was primarily the Dakota at that point. But you can go to New York now. I was in New York in July, And I went right by the Dakota, and there are people still out front of the Dakota. And you can go to Strawberry Fields, which is really right there in Central Park, almost adjacent to the Dakota on 72nd Street. And there are hundreds of tourists that are paying their respects to John Lennon. So, it, you know, considering that's 39 years ago, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I you know, while you were sitting there mentioning that, I recall that my wife and I went to New York City within the last 10 years, and I made a point of making that trek and going to the Dakota and just taking a picture of the outside of the building and having a moment there to sit there and think about the impact that guy had, you know, on my life and on the lives of so many other people. So definitely a loss, and we raised an adult beverage in his memory. So now, Barry, let's transition to something else. I got to be honest.
More upbeat? Is it something more upbeat?
I don't know if it's really upbeat, because it's not going to start off upbeat, but maybe it'll become upbeat after we talk about the genesis of what we're going to discuss. For the first time ever here on Breaking Kayfabe, Barry and I are really going to break kayfabe on our own personal lives in regard to a subject matter that was posted on our Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry Facebook board by our friend Ed Munoz Jr. Ed posted something of a very personal nature, and it really kind of impacted me. And I reached out to him personally, and I said, hey, look, I said, I was really kind of touched by what you posted. Would you mind if we turn this into a talking point on the show? And he said, absolutely not. No, for those of you that don't know Ed, he goes as Edgar Munoz Jr., by the way, but he says, please refer to him as Ed. Ed has cerebral palsy, and so he deals with, you know, the limitations that comes with. So, consider that when you listen to what Ed had to say. Ed wrote, if you'll allow me, Barry, breaking kayfabe on life. I'm a very private person. My story is deeply personal, but I feel like sharing it with you guys since I feel like it can be cathartic. So here it goes. I had the biggest crush on a friend of mine, but she always had a boyfriend, so I never pursued it. Things with her husband deteriorated over time. So after waiting for a while, I shoot my shot. I wasn't expecting anything. Much to my surprise, she was pretty receptive to me and the way I went about expressing myself. As time went on, we got closer and shared some moments. Nothing major, just enjoying each other's company. We would make plans to hang out and do things outside of her job. Then my mom died. She was the person I was closest to during this time of grief. In anger, due to everything that had happened as a result of my mom's death, I called her job. Something I regret doing, I know I was wrong. She sent me a text the next day saying she needed space, which sucked for me because I needed her to be around, but I did my best. Her wishes, though, although I wasn't flawless in my execution the entire times. I got some things for her birthday and was eager to work through some issues. She had her coworkers lie to me for her, thus making me feel worse. After 11 months, she reached out to me, sort of. She knows my new number and calls it, asking for someone else, trying to be sneaky. I really dislike this woman. Well, first of all, Ed, allow me to say, on behalf of Barry, that you are certainly not the only person out there and the only guy and of the ladies in our group that have ever, you know, had someone... let's just politely say, pull the rug out from under them and, you know, kind of screw them over if that's the way you want to look at it, or break their heart if you want to look at it that way, or do you wrong. Let's put it that way. So I reached out to Barry and I said, Barry, you know, I'm sure that you, like I have been the victim of someone sort of not being completely transparent with you, not being completely honest with you. And maybe you've been that other person, because I know, as I sat there and thought about it, I have been both. I have been someone who was used, and not proud to say it, I was somebody that used somebody. So Barry, let me ask you first, have you ever been used by a love interest, shall we say? Of course, naturally, before the current Mrs. Rosa would never do something like that to you.
I mean, when you say used to, it basically means, have you ever kind of been fucked over with no regard to yourself? And I have, and I think in full disclosure, I've been the guilty party. When I was younger, and even as an adult, I did some things that I wasn't proud of. And there is one which I'm not going to fully share. And I thought about it, because to this day, it still bothers me, the things I would say and do to get laid. And as a young man in my early 20s, that was a primary goal for me, was to try to bed women and do these things. And it certainly doesn't happen now, Jeff. So, exactly. That's why when you're young, you got to take advantage of that shit. So thank God I did. But I did some things that honestly, I have a hard time coming to grips with it. I feel really bad. I feel like, wow. And I know why I did it. I fully understand why I did it, but it doesn't make me feel any better. And I'm, you know, it's interesting because I usually think of myself as the kind of person that's very accepting of the mistakes that I make because I've made a million mistakes. I'm not one of these people who beats myself up over anything. I say, wow, you fucked up. And then I move on. You know, it happens. We all make mistakes and deal with it. But there was a couple of things I did that I was like, man, like if my daughter ever dated a guy and did some shit like that, boy, I'd be in a lot of trouble. I will share one story and then I'll share a couple of stories of when I get, and I'll make them quick and I won't be as long-winded as I usually am. But I was dating this is going to come into it both right here. I was dating a girl in the mid 80s for about 3 years. And I woke up one night, Jeff, it was a Saturday night. It was around 1 a.m. and I had a pain on my side. Well, within 16 or 17 hours, I'm in the hospital and having my appendix out. And I called my good friend at the time, who was somebody I had grown up with. And we were very friendly. We had been friends for, you know, years. And he was in medical school at University of Miami Medical School. And I called him up. And I said, you know, can you check me out? He went to the hospital. He arranged everything. And I had my appendix out that night. So I get home and I'm living with this girl at the time. And we break up maybe a month later. And it turns out she's now dating my friend who's the doctor. This is my childhood friend. And it was such a betrayal, not necessarily even by her, because that certainly was a betrayal by her, but it was really a betrayal of him. I just felt that was just because we had been such good friends. So I started dating somebody, and I should say too, at this time, his brother was my best friend. I was with, you know, we like would hit the beach every day. We were, you know, we were best friends. I started dating somebody else, and I would say within a month or two after we split that she's been dating this guy, she starts calling me at night and she's like, oh, I wonder how you're doing. I wonder if I can see you. And I thought about it and this is, you know, I'm definitely not proud of this, but I understand why I did it. I consciously made the decision to get back with her just so I could break those two up. And I did get back with her and I broke those two up. And that's not something I'm overly proud of, but you know, I got to say clearly to both of them, fuck you both. You know, it may have been 32 and a half years later, but it was a real betrayal, from a very good friend and from somebody that I had been living with for 3 years. So I broke them up. We eventually broke up and we went our own ways and that was it. But, Jeff, I'm sure you got a story as well, right?
So that was a case where you were the betrayed and then the betrayer, like all in one.
Yeah.
We appreciate you incorporating that all into one story, Barry. Makes it a lot easier. So I will say the time that I feel like, I guess I was the victim of a betrayal. My second marriage was ending. I had someone who I had previously been in a relationship with in the past who sort of, made contact with me and who I engaged in a relationship with over the course of a few months. Only one problem there, Barry, and that is that she was currently betrothed to someone else, which is always a good idea. And so, but what happened was when the nefarious dalliance was exposed, we sort of went our separate ways. I had some awkward times where I was getting phone calls at work from the husband. But what happened then was after everything had kind of run its course, if you will, and I made an agreement not to pursue the matter anymore, shall we say, about 2 months after that, a friend of mine at work who was familiar with the entire situation received a phone call from that lady. And I wanted nothing more to do with the woman because it had caused so many, oh my God, so many problems in my life. I figured, yeah, this is somebody's trying to give me some clue, and it's time for me to jump on the clue bus here. So the woman reached out, not to me because I told her not to contact me anymore, reached out to my friend. And my friend pulled me aside and said, can I speak to you privately? So we kind of went out into the hall and I said, what's up? And she goes, well, let's just say Lady X. Lady X has contacted me and wants me to tell you something. And I said, okay, what is it? Yeah, she wanted to know if you're willing to start up the relationship again.
Wow.
And I said, does it look like I have fucking stupid tattooed on my forehead? Are you fucking kidding me? And so I made it quite clear that I was not interested. And now let me just say, I will say without equivocation that the time that I had with that woman was probably the wildest ride I'd ever been on in my life. As far as, you know, you talk about relationships having a high, high and a low, low. I had the highest of highs, but boy, did I have the lowest of lows, you know? And so I just was not willing to get back on that roller coaster. Even though those high highs were really good high highs, the low lows were really low lows, and I wanted no part of that. Well, interesting, Barry, because it just so happened that particular Lady X ended up coming back and working at my courthouse in my office. Yeah, awkward time.
Wow.
And I later found out that she, in fact, had started another dalliance with a member of the court deputy staff. This is what I've heard, all supposition, of course. Don't have any actual proof. But here's what I think is interesting, Barry. I have no proof to this, but I have come to suspect and to believe, based on what some people told me and what I heard, I think she and her husband were running a game. I think this was some kind of weird marital sex game that they played. And I was just one of the victims because I think they had done it before me. And I think they did it after me, too, where like she basically screwed around on her husband. And then, you know, once he gets wind of it, or, you know, he knows about it. And then there's the moment where he swoops in, and that's part of the thrill ride for them. So I was completely used. And, you know, what really sucks is this is somebody I really thought I had feelings for. And, you know, so, yeah, I got nicely, you know, I didn't get the courtesy reach around, if you get my drift there, Barry, on what happened to me in that relationship.
Yeah, Jeff, I clearly remember when you told me this story the first time. This is about 2 years ago,
and
year
trust
and a half
me,
ago.
Excuse me, Barry. I've given you people about 10% of the story, because when I told Barry this story, I said, this is the greatest story ever told, okay?
There,
because this involves me getting notes on my car, threatening notes from a member of a police force, by the way. So, yeah, that was what was that Kurt Russell movie, Barry?
What was that? That was a really good movie.
Oh, God. Yeah. Where he plays the cop that's after the guy's wife or something like that. It was pretty fucking scary. That's all I'll say.
And yeah. You left out some, I mean, and I understand why, but you left out some major details. Am I correct, too, that the husband is no longer breathing the same air that we are?
Yes, he is no longer with us, which is why I've gone into the 10% of the details, but right. Not the entire 90%. So,
But I remember, Jeff, you told me this story. We were in the car. We were going through a fucking monsoon, going to meet the Funks for dinner, when you were telling me. So we had a car ride from Tampa, from Lutz to Ocala, in the middle of what was potentially a hurricane. And you're telling me this story, my fucking wipers, they can't get the water off the windshield. I'm prepared to die. And you're telling me this story, but I never forgot it. That is really funny.
It'd have been a good story to go out with, though, Barry. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely too. So, there was a couple of times, when I guess I was the recipient, and I'll share. So I was dating a girl that I had worked with, and I was managing a restaurant in New York City, and she was a hostess, and I don't know if dating's even the word. I'm not quite
hooked
sure.
Hooked up.
We hooked up. We spent some time together. I enjoyed her company. There was nothing serious here. And I wound up getting into a serious relationship with somebody at the restaurant. And I wound up leaving my position because I didn't want to jeopardize that serious relationship. So I don't hear from this girl for months. never had a thought that I would ever hear from her again. And the next thing you know, she's calling my girlfriend's house, my girlfriend's apartment in New York City. And, you know, I'm like, hi. It's the most awkward conversation you could ever imagine. I'm like, hi, how are you? What's new? Like, you know, we had this great rapport and all of a sudden it's like, you know, it's completely different. So she calls a couple of times and she can clearly tell that this is very awkward. And then one day she's outside of the building as I exit the building. And she's like, oh, I just wanted to see how you were doing, see if you wanted to get together. And it was very odd because when we initially separated, she could have cared less. Like, it was just normal. But all of a sudden that I'm with somebody else, it's almost like she wanted to get in there and either screw with me or screw with this other – with the girl that I was dating. So I thought that was really odd. And then another thing happened in 1994 – and Jeff, you and I were friendly. My father passed away. My father was a big influence on my life. He was my closest friend, my closest ally. I was extremely close with my dad. And I was at the same time that my dad died, I had separated from a longtime girlfriend that I was in a very serious relationship with. So I was pulling a Charlie Harper. You familiar with that term, pulling a Charlie
Harper? You have me on that one.
So Charlie Harper is the Charlie Sheen character from Two and a Half Men. So I was dating. Dating's not the right word either. I was sleeping around. I was drinking. I was living a lifestyle of complete excess and debauchery. And I started dating this other, again, that's not the right word. I started seeing this other girl, absolutely beautiful and stunning. And I go to work one night and she calls me at work. My father had just died 24 hours earlier. And I go to work and she calls me and goes, I don't think we should see each other anymore. I think I need to move on. And she knew that my father had died 24 hours earlier. So it really struck me as like, could you have waited a couple of days? Could you have given me a window of a buffer without, you know, my, so it was, and I got to admit, that was a real time right there. And I'm going to quote Arn Anderson on this one, because it really, in times of despair and, you know, when
it's never a bad time to quote Arn. Go ahead and say
it. It's not. When you've hit rock bottom, Jeff, you got to quote Arn Anderson, adversity introduces a man to himself. And I went home that night and I said, all right, the girl that you love or the girl that at least you're in a relationship with that you've had, it's over. It's over. A girl that you were into from a carnal standpoint, just basically called.
By the way, I think that may be the first time we've ever used the word carnal. That was very good usage there, Barry.
Go ahead. Yeah, absolutely. I'm getting ready to play some Scrabble later. So then I was like, okay, so the girl that you were seeing that you were very physically attracted to just basically told you she's not going to see you anymore. Your father, who you unconditionally, absolutely idolized and loved, died. You're at a dead end job. And I went home that night and I was like, all right, really, like, what's next? What, you know, what's going to happen next? And it was at that point that I think I turned on an NWA Power show and or whatever it was called at that time. And there was Arn Anderson saying adversity introduces a man to himself. And I was like, you're goddamn right it does. And I picked myself up and obviously I did okay and everything's okay.
I think given the opportunity, should we ever have Arn on this fine broadcast, you should tell that story.
I think so.
How Arn Anderson saved you one day from the depths of despair. That's right. But no, that's a great story. So my time flip side, Barry, of where I was not the person getting, dare I say, screwed, but in fact being the screwer. So there was a time when I had moved away from the lovely South Florida area. Naturally, it was because of a girl, didn't work out. I went to the lovely metropolis of Jackson, Mississippi. Shout out to my boys, Jeff and David Steele. And that didn't work out. So I came back home to South Florida, begged for my job back, got my job back, stayed there another 32 and a half years. So that all worked out well. But so the first night I'm back in town, I call my friends, Dennis and Scott, and I said, you know, guys, I got to get out. We got to do something. So we went out to some club and, you know, just kind of hung out and had a few drinks. And then Dennis says on the way home, hey, why don't we stop off at this one other place? And of course, naturally, I forgot to mention, I had rented an apartment. And so my apartment was pretty much, I had a mattress, I think, lying on. I hadn't even set up my bed yet. And so so we go to this other club where a guy that we both work with was there, and he was there with a bunch of friends. So we all kind of start having a couple beers, just shooting the shit. And so he introduces me to this young lady whose name is Robin. And Robin was a hairdresser with the proverbial Ric Flair bleach blonde locks. But she seemed very nice. And, you know, we were both kind of getting halfway, you know, to the three seats to the wind. And so we sit there and kind of chatted for about an hour or so as everyone else is talking and stuff. And so at some point, John comes over and says, hey, we're getting ready to go. It's about closing time. Are you coming home with us? Or are you leaving with us? She turns unprompted and says, no, points at me and says, I'm going home with this guy. Well, Barry, just allow me to say at this point, I pretty much knew that it was going to end up as a good evening for me. So, even though I just had a mattress on the ground, I was so classy on the floor. So I ended up getting into a relationship with this girl for about 3 months. Okay. Which is very nice. The relationship, to use one of your Scrabble words, was primarily carnal in nature. Okay. I ended up, and tell me how stupid this is. You find faults with people, you know, when there's you're looking for a reason to break up and no longer go out with this person, you find faults for the weirdest things. Am I correct on that?
That's a Seinfeld. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, she had man hands. Right. So anyway, so this particular young lady had a tattoo. Okay. And for the longest time before my daughter became quite tattooed with her sleeves, et cetera, I was vehemently anti-tattoo. I would say that if a woman had a tattoo, even one, I mean, even the, you know, the spot on the crack of her ass or the little rose on the ankle, that you strike one full point. If she's a 10, she becomes a 9 because I hated fucking tats. Okay. Well, this woman had a rose right on her, I think it was her left boob. Okay. And of course there were various times where I wasn't noticing that tat, but there were other times that I was noticing it. So one of the times I noticed it was we went up for Thanksgiving to see my parents. Okay. And she came out one morning for breakfast. She naturally was sleeping in the bedroom. I was on the couch because, you know, decorum in Mr. and Mrs. Bowden's house, Barry. And so she was wearing a V-neck sweater. Okay. No, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, she wasn't, you know, exposing cleavage or anything like that where I'd be embarrassed, but the tattoo was sticking out. And I sat there and thought, I can't believe this woman is showing her tattoo to my parents. Mind you, this is the late 80s. My parents are very old school. That's all I'm going to say. So at this point, I start making my exit strategy. Okay. Besides all that, just because I'm really a piece of crap, Barry, I knew the holiday seasons were coming up. And I didn't want to buy her a gift. I'm such a shitty. So,
well, you had a game plan, though. Yeah.
Yes. So I break up with her literally like 2 weeks before Christmas. Okay. It's not working out. And she was absolutely crushed. She took it much worse than I did. I was like, okay, I'm done. So then to further my shitheel status, okay, take it up one more notch. 2 days after Christmas, I call her up, Barry. Hey, I've been thinking about you. How you doing? Oh, hi. How's it going? Hey, why don't you come over? I'll make you dinner. Okay. So now, Barry, you, of course, the connoisseur of fine foods and many different restaurants and establishments. I think we at one of our Q&A shows, the question was asked, is Barry a good cook? So, Barry, I'm sure if you had a young lady coming over, you're looking for a little makeup action, you're going to prepare a fine meal, right?
I'm going to go the distance. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, I did too. I made the beef stroganoff, Barry.
I love beef stroganoff. Yeah,
there's no cost that I wouldn't, you know, take care of to make this night right for this woman. So I make her the beef stroganoff. She comes over. I believe, by the way, at this point, as I've discussed previously, the Samantha Fox photos were on the wall. And so I come over, and then my game plan is soon known to her as I said, this couch, you're really uncomfortable. Why don't we relocate to the bedroom? Boy, I was slicker than what's Jim's line? I'm slicker than cum on a gold tooth. But anyway, so I get in there. I take care of my carnal needs with the young lady. Okay. Whereupon I never call her again. Yep, I just used her for that one night of post-Christmas holiday carnal action. But here's one thing that I found particularly fascinating. It like in hindsight, of course. You know, when you're the dumpy, okay, a lot of times, and this is the point I want to make to Ed, after all this long-winded stories by both you and I, when you're the dumpy, you always have that what if, you know, like, what if something, this had happened, you know, that Lady X, what if I had handled it this way? Would it happen? And you always sit there and, you know, geez, Barry, that's 20 years ago. And I still, you know, sit there and wonder, what would have happened if I had, you know, ended up with her somehow, you know, like she had gotten divorced from her husband and I ended up with her. What my life would have been like? I would have certainly never met, you know, Kim. So I feel like my life wouldn't have been as good, but you always have that sense of wondering what if, okay? On the other hand, if you're the dumper, you never have that sense. You know, you never wonder what would have happened if I stuck with a girl. To the point, so about 2 or 3 weeks after this, okay, after I've dumped her right after Christmas, I see my friend John at work, okay? So I went up and he said, hey, I understand you kind of did Robin wrong there. And he's kind of chuckling about it because let's be honest, he's a guy. And I said, oh yeah, man, I feel bad. I just kind of used her to have a little holiday sex and stuff. And he goes, well, you want to know something crazy? I said, what? He goes, I saw her in a bar like 2 or 3 nights ago. I said, oh really? Yeah. He said, yeah. He said, I asked her, I said, what happened to Jeff? She goes, oh my God, he did me wrong. He hurt me so bad. But tell him if he wants, he can call me. I'd love to hear from him.
Right.
You know, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just funny how life works out. And that's what I want to tell Ed. You know, as John Lennon, we mentioned John earlier, John said, life is what's busy while you're, you know, what happens while you're busy making other plans. That's what life is. And, you know, if you're not living the human experience, and part of the human experience is you get screwed sometimes. And, you know, like Barry quoted Arn Anderson, adversity introduces a man to himself. Well, maybe, Ed, this was, you know, your Arn Anderson moment. This was adversity introducing himself to you. And, you know, you have to take this. And even though it's a shit show right now, or it was when it happened, you pick yourself up and you keep moving forward. You know, you do what you got to do to keep living your life. So, Ed, on behalf of Barry and myself, keep living your life and move forward, my friend. Okay, so Barry, we are now joined by a proud member of the Brothership, a member in good standing, temporarily, of the Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry Facebook group. Barry, it's our old friend Rick Nathan. Rick, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, and it's a pleasure to be on the show, and thank you very much for having me.
I understand you are wearing your 605 Super Podcast shirt.
No. I'm wearing my Breaking Kayfabe with a Bowdrin and Barry t-shirt, because kayfabe mania is running wild all over me, brother.
Okay.
I think I need a towel.
Well, don't spill anything. That's all I'll say. So, Barry, you have brought to our attention some work that Rick is doing, unbeknownst to us here on the show. Why don't you fill the folks in on what Rick's been doing?
Yeah, absolutely, too. So I had the opportunity. So I knew Rick through via Facebook and via our Facebook group, and we became friendly. And when I was out in Los Angeles last month, I guess it's a little over a month at this point, I was lucky enough to go out to dinner one night with Rick and his beautiful wife, Valerie. And we can talk about that dinner, because that was a chicken, Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles. And that was fantastic. That was maybe the best chicken and waffles I've ever had. But at the same time, I got to listen. And his wife, Rick's wife, also works within the entertainment industry. So I got to listen to them. I asked a bunch of questions. And I was like, this is perfect. We have connections with a bigwig in Hollywood, California. I mean,
we're running in high cotton today, my friend.
Absolutely. So Rick is Rick works on the post production of a show right now called Married at First Sight. It is a documentary style reality show based around this social experiment where three experts match up, quote unquote, marriage ready singles. So it's kind of interesting. And I guess this show has been a big hit on Lifetime. The new season is coming up in just a couple of weeks.
Yes, we've been actually very lucky. I've been very fortunate. This is my 8th season on the show, and it originally started. Lifetime is a division of A&E Networks, and the show aired on another channel, FYI, that they had for a while, and then simultaneously on FYI and A&E. And then they decided to fold it into Lifetime. And since it's gone to Lifetime, we've experienced the highest ratings show's ever had. I think our finale last season reached 1.5 million people, which was crazy for us. We've been number one on the network. We're just truly grateful to everyone who watches.
Those are the kind of numbers that Dave Penzer gets on a weekly basis on his podcast, Barry. Am I correct?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
So, big money Penzer, huh?
Cash money, please.
Cash money Penzer.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, Barry, continue. Too, is it? Yeah, so Rick, 52 episodes. Now, have you worked on all 52 of those episodes?
Most of them, 42 at least. The first season I was not on. I came aboard. I'd finished up a gig and came right aboard on the second season. And from where we're actually starting, season 10 will be the season that airs this year, this coming year. Season's 10, and they're talking about 11 as well. At the same time I've done all those episodes, we have a companion show which airs beforehand. It's a half-hour interview show that they do called Unfiltered, and that airs the half hour before the show airs. And I do those as well. And we have a couple clip shows, and there's usually some specials that I'm doing. So I'm a pretty busy guy during my daily routine.
So, Rick, let me ask you a question. I'm sorry, Barry. So,
no, you're good.
How do you find these people that are looking for love, shall we say?
Well, casting usually sets out to the city that gets decided upon, and they send out usually during the season airing towards the end, they'll kind of flash commercials of, hey, if you live in this city, we're coming to this city, we're casting singles. They get a ton of people who apply, and then we have these workshops, these callbacks that people come to, and then they wear it down to bring it down to certain people to come to the workshops. And from the workshops, the experts basically decide who they'd like to see married, they think are going to work, based on these personality profiles that they fill out and all sorts of other criteria. And then they decide how many couples they want to put together. And we have been steady for the past couple of seasons at four couples, but this season we're going to have five.
So how do you weed out the people that are there just because they want to get on TV and the people that are actually interested in a relationship?
I believe what the experts do, I think they, a lot of the interview process that doesn't make it to TV is to kind of weed that out. I think pretty much in reality TV at this point, you know, with any major show, you're going to have people who just want to be on TV. It's just going to happen. People are willing to, you know, say and do anything to get on TV. I feel, though, that we've been pretty strong with the people who feel like they want to get married and are ready for a commitment, or at least at the time think they are ready for a commitment. Usually they try and pull people that are in a position in their life where the only thing that might be missing for them is a significant other, and they're just really, really tired of the dating scene. In a lot of these cities, the dating scene isn't great. I mean, I certainly know before I got married in Los Angeles, it wasn't fantastic. I got very lucky, though.
You did get lucky, too, having met your wife. You absolutely did. And I told this story when we were when we did a recap of my trip out to L.A., but as you and I sat outside of Mashdy Malone's ice cream, probably 10 o'clock at night, and you're just so peppering good. Me. Oh, it's the best ice cream. But you're peppering me with all these wrestling questions. And your wife, who has an extremely limited knowledge of professional wrestling, is just looking at you with like these hearts in her eyes. And I was like, why doesn't my wife ever, when I talk about, you know, Terry Funk, I get like looks of disgust, you know, and your wife just giving you this great look. But so you've been doing this show now for a while. What is the craziest thing you've either that you can share? The craziest thing that you've either seen or learned about the contestants or a certain contestant as long as you've been doing the show?
The craziest thing. That's a really good question. I think for the most part, and this is kind of on some other shows too, it's not specific to this show, is just the craziest thing would probably be how people are willing to turn their 15 minutes of fame into kind of a brand for themselves.
Sure.
Where you'll see people, you know, they'll have Instagram pages. Like I did a show, Honeymoon Island, which was a spinoff show of this. And so many of the people on that show, you know, they're in excellent shape, of course. And you look at their Instagram pages now and they're like, you know, they're trying to become influencers. We've had some husbands, I think, too, who, you know, through the course of the season, you know, people are just learning that these guys are just not ready to be married. And I think that's been a good one. Some of the brides, too. It's not just a male thing.
Well, that leads my next question, Rick. So out of all the years you've been doing this, and if you have four couples per show, what's the percentage on people that actually stay married and people that decide, yeah, this may not be for me?
Right now, let's see, in 9 seasons having aired, we have 8 couples that stayed together. So we're averaging one couple per season,
okay.
Which is, you know, I think it's pretty good. You know, arranged marriages, I think, and you know, and this is something that I found very interesting, is the amount of people who come into this and their families think, oh, wow, arranged marriages, this is crazy. And yet, you know, for hundreds of years, possibly even thousands, arranged marriages were the norm. And now it's looked at as, oh, my God, why are you doing this crazy thing? So I think having 8 based on being professionally matched by our experts, I think is pretty good.
Now what's the background on your experts? What are we talking about here? Marriage counselors, psychologists, what?
Yes, we have Pastor Calvin Roberson, who's a professional marriage counselor and a pastor. Dr. Pepper Schwartz, who is a sociologist and also teaches. And then Dr. Viviana Coles, who just came aboard the last couple of seasons, and she is a marriage and family therapist and sexologist.
Okay, so Lou just wanted me to ask, did you just say Dr. Pepper?
Dr. That's Pepper.
Exactly what I heard, yes. Too, yes.
She's Dr. a pepper, pepper, you're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper, too?
Wouldn't you like to be a pepper, too?
So you got a good cross-section. That's what I was trying to get at.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, it's not just we've had some various experts on the show. At one point, we had a religion person, but Pastor Cal kind of covers that, you know, being a pastor and a marriage and family therapist. And a couples therapist. So yes, we do a pretty good cross section, and everybody has their kind of part to play in putting the couples together.
So, what would your all time biggest disaster story be of any one couple over all the seasons?
All time biggest disaster story. Oh my God! Well, the last 2 seasons have been pretty.
Just like where one couple was like, whoa, this was not a good idea, that kind of thing.
We had a couple last season where, well, okay, the biggest disaster has to be season 4, which was our Miami season. Hey, Florida man and Florida woman.
Go figure.
We had a couple that got matched, and they looked great on paper. And then on the honeymoon, they just ended up just hating each other. And it's a rare moment in the show where this happens. They decided to get a divorce right after the honeymoon. And
I almost did that once, but I digress.
Well, you were a Florida man for a while.
That's true.
So, Rick, the show was actually in the news this past week. I guess a previous past contestant named Jamie Otis, pregnant with her second child. She's been diagnosed with HPV. And could be an early sign of cancer. So, definitely, she's beautiful too. Very, very sorry to hear that somebody. So, have you had anybody that's been on the show that has gone on to fame other than that quick 15-minute Twitter or Instagram fame?
You know what? To be honest, Jamie is the biggest person we've had. I mean, she is really, and I've met her. She is a very lovely person. And truly deserving of what she's received. I know she wrote a book. She and her husband ended up having a spinoff series. She hosts our Unfiltered show. It's very much within the Married at First Sight realm, but I would say that she has become kind of the most famous from the show.
Gotcha.
Okay. Let me ask you, when you look at, you know, you got these people that are coming in, they're matched up on different, you know, whether it's personality or whatever. What do you find as a general rule? And I'm not looking for any kind of specifics. What is it that people that are out there that have decided, okay, I want to look for a long-term relationship or a marriage, are they looking for looks, personality, you know, what is it they're looking for?
It's a combination. I feel that, you know, it's very interesting. I think that a lot of people, you don't know what to expect. When they're standing at that altar, when, say, the groom is standing at the altar and then the bride is walking down the aisle, they haven't seen each other yet. So a lot of them are looking for personality. I feel that, you know, they have gone out, they've done the dating thing. They've, you know, met people who they are attracted to, but obviously not worth maybe more than a couple of dates. And I think it's more for more of the people that we have on the show. It's been more about, you know, I want somebody who shares my interests, somebody who likes the same things I do, somebody who, you know, has a good sense of humor, has the same intelligence I have. And, you know, they like to say we do a matchmaking special at the beginning of the season. It airs on the first night. And usually we show a little bit of the callbacks and workshops for the matchmaking special. And they'll say right there in front of the men and women that they have, you know, look, if you've never dated Beyonce, don't expect Beyonce. If you know, if you've never dated, you know, someone absolutely gorgeous, a supermodel, you're not going to get it. We're looking to find you a real marriage that is going to last you beyond this experiment for the rest of your life.
So the women should not expect someone that looked like Barry and I, you know, the true supermodel gentleman, that kind of thing.
You know, we very rarely have guys on there with the rock hard abs and pectoral muscles of.
Hey, you're talking Barry and I, right there. Cougar.
Yeah, you know, we rarely have that. usually it's more, you know, middle of the road people. I mean, everybody's attractive in their own way. You know, I'm certainly not one to pass judgment.
They got nice personalities.
Interesting. I'm not one to pass judgment. I'm certainly more of a fleshy one myself right now. So, you know, it's just to be about, I wake up and I wonder, you know, what my wife thinks when she looks at me sometimes. So, you know, everybody, we usually have, I don't think we've really ever had somebody just, you know, a Quasimodo on the show. So I think we've been pretty good.
Well, all I can say is I hope that once they get married, nobody, you know, none of the grooms give their brides a Peloton, because based on what I've heard recently, yeah, that's not a good idea.
Oh, my Lord.
I want a Peloton, Jeff. What is that? What's everybody got against Peloton?
Well, I don't know, but if Mrs. Rose gives you a Peloton, that says something about your body, and she's body shaming you, Barry.
Yeah, but I get a Peloton, right? Please, you could spit on me if you give me a Peloton. I'm fine with that.
Well, so, you know how much those things cost?
Exactly.
I have a couple coworkers who have Pelotons, and they freaking love it. They jump off.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like just the most amazing thing. So, hey, looking at your bio, you've been doing a lot. You've been out in Los Angeles for 20 years now. Yeah. Started out as an actor and a stand-up comedian, but you worked on some great movies. Memento, which you and I did talk about over dinner, Donnie Darko. But I look at the TV shows you've worked on: Last Comic Standing, Dirty Jobs, American Chopper, The Ultimate Fighter, and Ghost Hunters. So, Rick, the all-important question right now: do ghosts exist or not?
I like to think they do.
Ah-ha!
I think they do.
Of some debate here on the show, Rick.
Oh, yeah. I've seen some stuff, that is unexplainable. I'd like to think they do. I hope they do, because I would not like there to be nothing after this. But yeah, I think they do.
Well, so you're saying that ghosts do exist. Jeffrey? Lou, sweet Lou, are you there? We've never asked you this question.
I'm here.
Sweet Lou, do ghosts, specters, do they exist, or is this just all malarkey?
I like the way you phrased the end of that
malarkey
question there.
Uncle Joe Rose.
Yep. Yes, yes. I have no hard empirical evidence to back up a claim or anything. I think there is some spiritual spectral existence around. Whether it shows up on any of the shows on the Travel Channel, for example, I'm not exactly sold on.
You know what that sounds like to me, Barry? That sounds like a hard maybe.
That's what I got. Right. Switzerland just arrived.
excellent political talk there.
So, Barry, why don't you tell the folks where and when they can find Rick's show since it's getting ready to debut?
Even better. Why don't we let Rick tell everybody? As I mentioned, it's Lifetime. It's January the 1st. What's the time slot on that, Rick?
It's at 8 o'clock. This season, we're actually doing two-hour episodes, with the exception of the matchmaking special, which is always an hour long. We run in direct opposition to AEW and NXT. So, it's going to be great for this audience. But I think that Cornette should get a chance to review our show next to AEW and NXT. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
I would give him a nice week off. He'd get a little de-stressed. Yeah. And, he could poke fun at people that maybe deserve to have fun poked at him.
But, we aired January 1st. And then I believe this season we're doing 16 full episodes. And our finale will be the 17th episode. We have a couple of clip shows coming, and I think some other fun goodies coming to go along with this season.
Okay, well, Rick, we certainly appreciate you coming and spending a few minutes talking about the program. We want to thank you for your participation on our Facebook group, and I'm guessing that if any of members of our Facebook group have any kind of questions about the show, they can certainly reach out to you, and you'll be happy to answer those questions.
Yeah, everybody but Zaha. Everybody but Zaha.
And Greenbaum. You don't want that asshole either.
Yeah, anybody can reach out if you want. I'm always happy to talk the show. I like meeting everybody through the group. It's been very illuminating to know there's all these people who really like classic wrestling. I learn a lot from this show. I'm very proud to be a fan of the show because I know absolutely nothing about championship wrestling from Florida or really most Japanese wrestling. So it's been quite an education for me.
Well, we're happy that you're part of our group and an active member of our group, and we do appreciate it. So Barry, anything before we go?
No, I just, I want to thank Rick for coming on. So I guess the last question or last thing, when can we expect a documentary style television show on Breaking Kayfabe with Baudrin and Barry? How soon can we get that out there?
Listen, you guys come out here. I'll set up a pitch. We'll have you pitch our people, and then we'll see where it goes.
We'll talk to our people, and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, we'll have a
meeting.
Lunch. Yeah, we'll have a little lunch. Your people will have lunch with my people. We'll probably over chicken and waffles, and we'll go from there.
Well, and the most important question before we end, Rick, is there any way during one of the tapings of the meetings between the men and the women that we can get one of them to wear a Breaking Kayfabe t-shirt?
That'll take some doing, considering all these people before they go.
You're going to have to get that cleared with the legal department.
Huh? I think it'd be fantastic if someone just showed up to one of these wearing a Breaking Kayfabe t-shirt, and who knows what happens in the future.
That's
ratings.
True.
Ratings gold, guys.
Yep. All right, Rick, we appreciate you joining us, buddy. You have a good one now.
A pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Barry, it is time. Benji, you can officially let Antonio listen now. It is time for our match of the week. And we are going to Albany, New York, the Knickerbocker Arena, January 19th, 1992. It is the Royal Rumble. And holy shit, Barry, I think I can... Sorry about that, Antonio. Holy cow, excuse me.
There you go. Already out.
This was the longest match we've ever reviewed on this show. Thanks a lot, Antonio. You couldn't give Barry a nice 10-minute match. Barry, you've had a chance to watch this match. What did you think of the 92 Royal Rumble?
Yeah, and I got to say, too, that had anybody else other than Antonio, who I love with all of my heart, had suggested a match that was going to go an hour and 15 minutes or whatever it went, I would have said not a chance, because with a severe case of ADD like I have, it is very hard for me to continually just sit there and watch it. But this is, this was a great match. And when you approached me and told me, I was like, yeah, absolutely. So, there are advantages to being old. There's not a lot. But partly is that we were able to watch some great wrestling going back to the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. And when this took place, this was everything in 1992. Ric Flair leaving the NWA and WCW and going to the evil empire up north, which is what we all thought was huge news. It might have even been the story of the year for us. It was a really big deal. So Flair,
this would be. I'm trying to hold on 1 second here. I'm trying to put it into terms that someone who wasn't around then but watches the current product. This would be the equivalent, I think. And tell me if I'm wrong here. This would be like Brock Lesnar showing up one day on the AEW show. Is that fair?
I don't think so. No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. I don't think there is anything that you can compare. And I think because the world's changed in the last 27 years since
That's
this match
fair.
Took place, I just don't think you can compare it with. I don't. If Brock showed up in Impact, we wouldn't. You wouldn't give a shit. You could care less. Ric Flair going from NWA WCW to the WWE. We got to remember too. This is pre-internet. So we were getting our information via Meltzer through the Observer or phone calls to each other. But we didn't find out about this immediately because there was no internet at that point. We weren't on the internet. So this was, and this was our world. This was a big deal. So Flair going up to the Federation and then Flair being the focus of the Royal Rumble. And spoiler alert, because it's 27 years later, so we're going to talk about it. Flair actually winning this match was a huge, huge deal at the time. You thought so. I thought so. And I think anybody who was a wrestling fan, this was an absolutely huge deal. This was one of the biggest, I would say one of the biggest things of the early 90s with Flair jumping ship. It didn't work out. Sadly, as we know, it didn't work out with him being up there. And Flair as a champion apparently didn't do too well. I think there was a different demographic and fan base for the WWE at that point than certainly what WCW and the NWA had. So not really a knock on Flair, just more a knock that, a different audience. But again, really, really big deal. This was also historic in a sense because this was the first and only time in the WWF, WWE that the last man in the ring was actually going to win the title. Usually you become the number one contender. So that was also a big deal. This was the fifth Royal Rumble. As you mentioned, this took place at Knickerbocker Arena in Albany, New York. But the star of this match, besides Flair, has to be the commentary of Bobby the Brain Heenan. Now, certainly he and Monsoon were as a team, and we raved about them just a couple of weeks ago. But this is the Bobby Heenan show as well. And Bobby Heenan, this is a work of art here. Bobby Heenan, and it was established from the moment that Flair walked into the WWF that Heenan was a full supporter of his. He was, he was 100% behind him. But this, listening to Heenan, his love for Flair, which turns into this kind of panic deal during the middle of the match when he's concerned that Flair's going to get eliminated. And then this culmination of joy when Flair wins is maybe one of the great match callings of all time. There's not a lot of discussion of holds. This isn't Gordon Solie with, lower lumbar region and vertical suplex. This is more Heenan telling a story from start to finish. And it's fantastic. Do we have any listeners, Jeff, who don't have their eyesight, that are blind? Are you aware of anybody?
That's a fair question. I don't know the answer to that.
Because I think you could listen to this match and not see it, and the story is still going to be as impactful for you. And that's based off of Heenan and then to some lesser degree, Monsoon. But from start to finish, and it just such a great match. Flair does win at the end. And Jeff, I know you've got, I think you told me you had 6 pages of notes.
Yeah, I have copious notes on this.
You do. So I'm going to let you take the bulk of this one. But the story here, I think, was the Sid Vicious heel turn.
Sid Justice, please.
Sid Justice, that's right, which comes at the very end of the match. The heel turn, and then Ric Flair enters at number three and becomes, you know, I think a god. And how exciting, because I remember watching this, and I may have even watched this at Greg Good's house with you, probably. This was a big, big deal when this was happening. I love seeing actually Flair and Haku go at it, which I thought was great. And that's kind of towards the beginning of the match. Possibly the best Royal Rumble ever. And I think that's predicated on the finish. But in his book, and I pulled this up because I remember him discussing it, Ric Flair mentioned that when he showed up the arena that day, he didn't know that he was going to be getting the belt. He thought that he was going to be brought in at number three to show his skills and endurance to the audience, that people that may not have known him from NWA, WCW, but he didn't know. And Bobby the Brain mentions this as well and says that it was his suggestion that Flair enter the Rumble at number one for dramatic purposes. Vince McMahon changed that to number three and then, of course, claimed it as his own idea. Which is not surprising there, but this is the Ric Flair show. This is, you know, after being subjected to gimmick upon gimmick upon gimmick of a lot of guys that even if they could wrestle, they weren't given the opportunity because it was a gimmick fest. All of a sudden, Ric Flair's in this ring for a fucking solid hour. It's like 59 minutes and change. And he goes the distance. He's Ric Flair. So I'll say this might be the best Rumble from start to finish. And there was a great selection of talent in this match as well, Jeff.
Yeah, a couple things based on what you just spoke of. I think obviously the finish was a nice way of giving Flair the world strap without having to have Hogan put him over. There were certainly political mechanizations running wild when it came to this match, protecting guys whose ego, dare I say, did not want to have them, you know, be put in a position where anyone looks stronger than them, perhaps longtime rivals, that kind of thing. The other thing that I found fascinating, you mentioned Flair and Haku, was the number of callbacks that you'd have. Like there was a spot where Flair was working with Kerry Von Erich. Yeah. There was a spot where Flair was working with Valentine, with Piper. And it was just like, oh my God, remember when these guys were, and it was like, you know, kind of a great moment for historians and for people that were, you know, have their memories of their younger days as they're watching this to go back. And it's really kind of fun. So anyway, so what I did was 6 pages of notes, folks. So I started going back and what I did was I put an order of who came in. I didn't necessarily put who got out, but the order of their entry into the Royal Rumble and some of the great lines that went on also. So, again, we have Heenan and Monsoon, never better. The show starts off with Howard Finkel going over the rules. He introduces Jack Tunney. Jack Tunney, Bobby Heenan calls him Jack on the Take Tunney, which I thought was just a great line. He says that Jack Tunney is the best president since Noriega. Now, 27 years later, there are a lot of people out there that aren't going to get that joke. But let me tell you, in 1992, that was a pretty hilarious
That's
joke.
Great.
Yeah. So the first two entries are Davey Boy Smith and Ted DiBiase, who is accompanied by Sherry Martel, ends up with DiBiase going out fairly quickly with a clothesline. Then Ric Flair comes in with Mr. Perfect, you know, Bobby Heenan. Every time a name was announced, you know, the first two, you know, Bobby's like, oh, my God, I hope he's number 30 and just panicking. So when he comes out, Bobby Heenan says, I really don't think I can be objective here. And Gorilla Monsoon says, when have you ever been objective? So then number four, Jerry Sags from the Nasty Boys comes in. And Gorilla Monsoon begins to chastise Bobby Heenan and says, you're supposed to be a broadcast journalist. He says, Bobby Heenan says, I told you to shut up. And then there's a great spot where Flair is chopping Davey Boy Smith. And Bobby Heenan says, it sounds like a 357 Magnum went off when he hit him with those chops, which I thought was kind of a cool reference. Number five in was Haku. Gorilla Monsoon mentions that Mr. Perfect is still at ringside. He doesn't understand why, as a manager, he would still be at ringside. I thought Bobby Heenan had a great line where he said, Mr. Perfect is not a manager. He's an executive consultant. Just kind of a funny line. So then Shawn Michaels comes in at number six. He's sporting just an absolutely stellar mullet. No one can question that. Yeah, you're going to notice me talking about hair now a little bit. So then Bobby Heenan was getting so overwrought about what was happening to Ric Flair. He said, the room is starting to spin. Please, someone get me something to drink. Then we had next Tito Santana comes in at El Matador. I really hated that gimmick, by the way, Barry, the El Matador gimmick. So then there's a a point where Flair gives the proverbial nut shot to the Bulldog. Gorilla Monsoon says, "Did you see that?" Bobby Heenan says, "Do you know what's at stake here? I'd do that to my grandmother if I had to." The next person in is the Barbarian. And Bobby Heenan with a great line says, "Why do you think they call him the Barbarian? He's not a hairdresser on his day off, by the way." Then we have Kevin Von Erich. Kerry Von Erich, excuse me. The Texas Tornado come in. Oh, my God, Barry, I forgot those tassels that he wore on his boots. Could they be any more distracting? It was horrible. And,
well, I think it was to hide the fact of the ankle injury, right, or the missing of the foot.
I could be, but I just found it very distracting. So there's a spot where Flair and Shawn Michaels are bumping like crazy as Kerry is doing the discus punch. Again, a little bit of throwback. Next person in is the Repo Man. Bad gimmick, by the way. Bad gimmick for Barry Darsow. Yeah. So the next person in, Greg Valentine, who immediately goes after Flair. Do you remember at this point, Greg Valentine, was he a babyface here?
I think he was towards the end of his WWE.
Yeah, because he had the lighter boots and a much more of a babyface appearance, I thought here. But he already looked old, by the way. You know, you look at pictures of Greg Valentine now, and, you know, what is he like, close to 70 years old? But he's looked like he's 70 for the last 30 years, I think. So next up is Nikolai Volkov, who apparently it must be a babyface now, because instead of, you know, the evil Russian, they refer to him, I thought this was cute, as the 320-pound Lithuanian, not Russian. He's Lithuanian, Barry. He gets out fairly quickly. Next in order, we have the Big Boss Man come.
Okay, was he a babyface also, Nikolai?
No, that's what I said. I think at this point, the way they referred to him, not as a Russian, but a Lithuanian, right. I think that was a clear signal that he was going to be a babyface. Then next we have the Big Boss Man, and then Hercules. And then in the number 15 spot, Roddy Piper comes out. Huge pop. And, you know, when he and Flair face off with one another, just got a huge, huge reaction. It was really great. It was like, you know, the proverbial two old dance partners, you know, going at it, and two guys that were friends for the last, I don't know, decade, if not longer. This number 16 in is Jake Roberts. And there's a great spot. This is one of the best parts of Heenan in a great night of commentary. This might have been one of the best, is when Jake Roberts goes after Flair. And he's I don't know if he's getting ready to DDT Flair or what. And Roddy gives him a clothesline and breaks it up. And Bobby Heenan says, "Thank you, Roddy. I never thought I'd say that. It's a kilt. It's not a skirt. It's a kilt." And then after Piper starts scrapping with Flair again, he says, "You no good creep, you skirt wearing freak." So that was good stuff. And, you know, I sat there and I found myself thinking, you had Piper, Flair, and Jake Roberts. Boy, those are three great wrestling minds in the ring all at once, huh, Bear?
Yeah, they were too. It was that I think that too. If you look at some of the talent that was in that match, I do think that was probably the most loaded of a lot of the Royal Rumbles.
Yeah, you know, it was. There were 30 guys, and I'd say 22 guys were really big deals, and then there was about 8 where you're like, you know, Repo Man, right? I mean, come on, you know. And then next up was Jim Duggan, who I got to be honest with you, Jim Duggan was in this a lot longer than I expected. You know, you have some people that went in and out relatively quickly. Jim Duggan spent a good 25 minutes. I mean, he put in his day's work. Let me see. What was it? Gorilla Monsoon goading Bobby Heenan here as Bobby is worrying about Rick and how long has he been in? And Gorilla's like, it's just a shame that Rick was the third entry into the Royal Rumble and is still in there. And Bobby Heenan says, "It's a conspiracy. We were jobbed. I'll bet Hulk Hogan had something to do with this," which I thought was pretty cute. The next entry at 18 is IRS Mike Rotunda. Number 19, Jimmy Snuka. Speaking of people that didn't need to be in this event. He chops Piper and Flair. Not that Piper and Flair. Holy cow, they were laying into one another. I don't know if you had a chance to catch this, but they were just being stiff as all get out. The number 20 entry is the Undertaker. Little throwback here. He gives Hacksaw Jim Duggan the old Sully shot there in the corner. I thought that was, and then Bobby Heenan said 2 points for that. And then 21 was Randy Savage. He comes in. Now, here's an interesting point, Barry, if you remember this. Randy Savage is at this point apparently is feuding with Jake Roberts. So he spends most of his time in the ring chasing after Jake Roberts. Jake Roberts gets thrown out. Macho Man goes to the top rope, dives onto Jake Roberts down on the floor, and then begins following him up the walkway. The Undertaker goes out and gets Randy Savage and brings him back in. So Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon are saying, "Oh, well, Randy Savage is eliminated because he hit the floor." And then, as if they had the proverbial voice talking into their earpiece. Say, oh, no, wait a minute. No one threw him over. He's still in the match. And, you know, it struck me, Barry, is whether or not that was somebody hadn't thought about that until that moment. And it was sort of like booking on the fly. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know, because that was a period. I mean, they're all the period where McMahon literally books everything from A to Z. I don't know if that was booking on the fly. I know it seems like it,
yeah.
But that
goes also said, oh, you have to be propelled over the top rope by someone else. You can't do it yourself.
Right.
So the next person in is the Berserker, John Nord, doing the full on Bruiser Brody gimmick, including with the huss, huss, and making the chop, you know, just like Brody would on his intros. And then when Flair gets into it, why are you fighting these guys? Why don't you just go to a corner and let these guys eliminate Heenan again with some really gold commentary? And then he says, you know, you should weasel your way out of this. At which point Monsoon said, you know, weasel your way out. He said, I never thought I'd say that. The next entry is Virgil, who, again, did not look good. Why is Virgil in here? Let's see. Heenan with a great line about Virgil. Virgil just came out. He's, what, number 23? Who knows how many bags he's gone through in the back? And Monsoon says, will you stop me? Yeah, I thought that was a pretty funny word. Next, number 24 is the Iron Sheik, who is, I believe, Colonel or General Mustafa. He's in and out of there pretty quick. Next was Rick Martel. Rick Martel going out with Ric Flair. As I watch this happening, I said, there we got an AWA champ and an NWA champ going at it with one another in the ring. And then, of course, number 26, the Hulkster comes out. And by the way, kept that headpiece on kind of long. He hates to have that bald head shown. And but anyway, Heenan with the line, yeah, please let Flair win it. I'll never say anything bad about anyone. I'll be a different person. And Monsoon says, boy, have we heard that one before. So the next person out, and I want to address this with you, actually, Barry, number 27 was Steve Kern as Skinner. So tell me, you know, you're Mr. CWF here. What did you, as somebody who's a lifelong CWF fan, what were your feelings on seeing, you know, Steve Kern, one of the all-time great baby faces in CWF history, doing the Skinner gimmick?
Yeah, the first time I ever saw it, too, I think I had seen it on television, but I actually saw him at a live show in Miami. I think it was at the Knight Center, might even have been against Coco Beware. And it was terrible. And a lot of it was he wasn't Steve Kern. He was now Skinner, but he wasn't wrestling like Steve Kern used to wrestle. It was completely different. So, look, I got it. I hated seeing it. But at the same look, we had seen Dusty Rhodes and the Polka Dots as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Which was more humiliating for sure. But I got it. Look, these guys, this was a payday. These guys were looking to get paid, and this was the job that was offering good pay. So I understood that.
Sure. So next in number 28, Sergeant Slaughter. Bobby announces that Ric Flair has set a new record. He's been in there for 55 minutes. Why don't they just give him the belt now? I thought that was a pretty funny line. Number 29 was Sid Justice. And, you know, as I sat there, you know, there was a point in the match when Sid Justice had first come in. I don't know if you saw it, Barry. He does a kip up at his size, which is unfriggin' believable physically for a man at, what is he, 6'8", about 320, do a kip up is amazing. And I sat there and found myself wondering, Barry, imagine if Sid Vicious or Sid Justice, imagine if he gave a shit about wrestling. You imagine what he could have been.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, or was in his right, if he wasn't completely insane, as I heard he was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because he had a great look, unbelievable great look. Figure. I mean, he was everything Vince could ever want, physically speaking, you know. But, yeah, I'd rather play softball and just kind of hang out and do crazy things in hotels. So number 30, the final entry, again, guys that didn't need to be there, the Warlord. I saw the Warlord come down, I said to myself, well, this is obviously pre-testing. It comes down, there's some eliminations. So it comes down to Flair and Sid Justice. The Hulkster has just been thrown out. Hulk reaches up, grabs Sid's arm, and with the Hulk's help, Flair throws out Sid Justice, wins the match. And of course, at this point, Sid and Hogan come back in the ring. Your new world champion immediately skulks out of the ring, and they have the post-match is all about Sid and Hulk, which, let's be honest, let's remember who the promotion's really all about, even though Ric Flair has been given the strap here. I thought you're right when you said that it's Flair and Bobby, but I would also like to give a special shout-out because, boy, I thought Roddy Piper really worked his ass off of this match. He was in there a good half hour, too, I think. They went to Gene Okerlund for the post-match interview, And he introduces Jack Tunney, who's handing the belt to Rick, as the distinguished Jack Tunney. I don't know who told him Jack Tunney was distinguished. But did you notice there's also a great moment right at the very end as they're closing up the segment where Gene, and I'm sure this is just a rib on somebody, he looks off camera and says, "Hey, put that cigarette out." Okay, so now, folks, and just like completely out of nowhere, starts talking to somebody off camera who's smoking a cigarette. I'm sure it was a rib on one of the guys, but it was a very funny ending to the show. We want to thank Antonio for helping us out with this segment and recommending this match. Thank you so much, Antonio. It's a good, entertaining match. Nice look back on some of the guys that we grew up watching, Barry.
Yeah, definitely. I think there might have been better overall Rumble matches, but this ending was so satisfying. And I think that's been one of the big complaints over the last few years is, guys are winning that the fans really don't want to win. And again, we've talked about it and I won't go into it. You got to give the fans what they want. The fans are the ones buying the merchandise. They should be the ones dictating exactly what's going to be happening. Give the consumer what they want. We finally got it with this 1992 Royal Rumble.
Yeah, good stuff. So thank you, Benji. So now, Barry, it is time for us to do something we've never done here on Breaking Kayfabe with Bowden and Barry. Barry, are you ready? It's time for us to play a little adult trivia.
Oh, let's do it.
Okay, so now, gentlemen, I have a special surprise that I'm going to throw at Barry and Sweet Lou.
Uh-oh.
They know just the basic general outline of what I'm going to do here. Let me give you the background, though. So this past Monday night, my wife and I had to go pick up some medicine for our still recovering boy, Gunny. Had to get some of the old pain meds, little mother's little helper. And we had to meet. My daughter goes out every Monday night with her husband to a local drinking establishment to play trivia. She's been trying to get us to join, because she says, "Oh, you know, you are such a trivia guy. Why don't you join us and help us win the trivia contest?" So we go there to pick up the medicine and we're sitting there chit-chatting with them and the trivia guy's getting ready to get set up. So I said, "Okay, I'll tell you what, we'll stay for like the first round of trivia just to see what it's like." My daughter's very excited. So the guy gets ready, he starts up the trivia contest, and lo and behold, guys, it's not, yes, your ordinary trivia contest. What in fact it is adult trivia. So yeah, there's nothing quite like sitting there with your daughter in her mid-20s and her parents listening to these adult-themed, in some cases, extremely adult-themed questions. It was a little awkward, to say the least. I tried to imagine doing something like this with my parents, and yeah, it just wasn't going to happen. So, gentlemen, are you ready to see if you can answer these adult-themed trivia questions?
I am so looking forward to this, Jeff.
Sweet Lou?
All right.
Okay.
Fun for the whole
thing. Of course, yes. We can guarantee Antonio is not listening to this segment, so let him fly, boy. First question. Regardless of whether the definition has you donkey punching your partner in the back of the head or slapping them in the face with your dick, what three-word question is always involved in the multiple sex act known as the Tony Danza on Urban Dictionary? And by the way, no Googling.
Lou, any idea?
Wow, that was a long and complicated question.
Yeah.
So the Tony Danza is a three-word description?
Would you like me to repeat the question?
I'm just going to say bang Mary Lou Henner.
No.
Okay.
It was a good guess.
I was bang Alyssa Milano.
Okay. So Barry is a little bit closer to the answer. What was the name of the TV show that Tony Danza starred in?
Who's the Boss?
Exactly. That's your answer. Boom.
Oh, we're done. Boom.
Okay. Second question. Now, this is a sort of a multiple choice question, okay? So I'm going to give you a question that has 10 answers. All you need to do is come up with four of the correct answers, okay? According to Watch Mojo's 2017 video titled, quote, "Top 10 TV Shows with the Most Nudity," name any four of the shows that made the list.
Jeff, what was the year on that?
It was a 2017 question. Or a video from Watch Mojo, but I believe it did involve some shows that had come like a year or two before that also. It wasn't specific only to 2017 as far as I know.
Shit. I'll say Boardwalk Empire, Game of Thrones. It's got to be all HBO and cable shows, right?
Let me see here as I'm looking. That would be correct.
Okay. Boardwalk, Game of Thrones, Lou, any other ones you can, I mean, Game of Thrones has got to be on there because that was like a fucking orgy every week.
Right. I was going to say Red Shoe Diaries.
Right.
But that's kind of vintage.
Yeah. Cinemax. That was that Cinemax shit like at 3 a.m., right?
I forget if Red Shoe Diaries was Showtime.
Or maybe it was Showtime. Right. Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah. There was a there was a show on HBO years ago called Dream On, and there was nudity every single week on that show. Which is
not on the list. Don't waste your time.
All right. Yeah. Okay. So I got to go with those two. That's it.
Okay, Lou. Do you have any choices of your own?
Let's see. I'm gonna say was on Showtime. I think the Borgias. And. Yeah, that's it for me.
Okay, so I can tell you, gentlemen, that based on your answers, there has only been one correct answer offered for the top 10, okay? So let me give you the top 10. Number 10, on the Starz network, we have a show called Black Sails. I don't know if either one of you have seen it. It's kind of a pirate drama. Let's see, we got number 9, Orange is the New Black.
Oh, there you go.
Women in prison movie. Number 8, HBO's Westworld.
Oh, absolutely.
Number 7, Masters of Sex, the Masters and Johnson story.
Oh, duh. Yeah, that's a slam dunk.
Number 6, you guys are going to be really hating yourself that you missed this one, Shameless.
Oh.
Number 5, you got to have a vampire sex in there somewhere, True Blood.
Yep.
Number 4, Californication.
Oh, duh. Yeah.
Number 3, the one show that I think we can all pretty much agree we don't want to see anyone nude in, and that's Girls with Lena Dunham. Nobody really wants to see Lena Dunham nude. Number 2, Spartacus. And the number 1 answer that Barry got correct was, in fact, Game of Thrones. Slam dunk on that one. You were right, Barry.
All right. There you go.
Okay. So let's see. Okay. According to a 2000 article called Sexual Liberation and Political Control, what is the only nearly universal pornographic taboo that still remains?
I'm going to say it's with animals.
Sweet Lou, your choice?
That sounds just about right to me. But I'll say another answer. The old German Scheisser.
Yo, Scheisser, you mean scat videos, Lou?
You're talking about the Jimmy Valiant stuff?
Well, yeah. When I say it in German, though, it sounds cultured.
Oh, absolutely.
If it's European, I think that, it has to be okay.
Yeah, but I think the Germans are okay with that, aren't they? So Jeff said universal. I don't know. Is there a country that's into animals having sex with humans? I don't know.
Well, of course, there is one that you did not think of, either one of you, pedophilia.
Right, but aren't there some cultures where that?
Well, yeah, you know that, and that was my original thought as we were getting, you know, here we're sitting at the table talking about pedophilia with my child, and then we're talking about necrophilia. This is a good conversation to have with your kids. But no, in fact, the answer was pedophilia.
Oh, really? Okay, gotcha. And necrophilia. So somehow in some country, necrophilia is allowed.
You know, in Kazakhstan, the necrophilia films are really big. And
right.
Oh. But okay, now we're going to go with a straight up sexual question involving the Bible, which at this point, if my sister's listening, she's going to go, okay, time to turn it off. True or false, the Old Testament features multiple verses that either directly or indirectly reference God's penis.
I defer to Lou on this one. Yeah, I got no idea.
Barry, you have not, you know, come and written and done biblical study? No.
No. Oh, okay. No, I have not.
I shouldn't ask you what your favorite Bible verse is.
No.
Lou, give me a yes or no.
No. All I remember from Sunday school was just lying with so-and-so or so-and-so. I don't think I heard anything about a holy schwanz. So
okay. Well, Lou is right, because the answer is that it's false. The guy that did the trivia contest completely made it up.
So, oh, wow. There you go.
Yeah, you go. So, okay, now here's a good one, boys. According to a 2012 report published by AHA, on the subject of someone who dies during the old coitus. Approximately 88% of them were men. 75% of those men were committing what act? What act were they committing when they died?
I'm going to say adultery.
Lou?
I'm going to say the old David Carradine, Michael Hutchins. I forget the two-word term for it.
Autoerotic asphyxiation.
Yeah.
Don't ask me why I know that. But we are going to give it a breaking kayfabe knock to Barry Rose, who got the answer correct. Okay.
Up on my sex trivia game.
There you are, Barry. Okay.
Yeah, huh?
So, okay. Now, based on the most popular urban dictionary definition, given the following slang terms for doing drugs, I'm going to guess maybe, Barry, you might have a little more experience in this area than in the biblical quotes. Identify which drug is a euphemism for these terms, okay?
Okay.
Are you ready?
As ready as I'm ever going to be.
The first one, what are they talking about when they say getting geared up?
I'm already out. I have no idea.
Lou?
Geared up. I'm going to say amyl nitrate.
Out of the box guess, but wrong.
Okay. That's awesome. No.
Pulling that one literally and figuratively out of his ass. But the answer would be meth. So no.
There you go.
Okay, your second one. What does it mean? What do they mean when they say you're getting wet? By the way, Barry, do we know anybody on our group that may be an expert in this area?
I don't know.
No. Are you thinking of the person I'm thinking of?
Yeah, I am. Absolutely. Okay. Getting wet.
According to the Urban Dictionary, that is when you take PCP.
Oh.
Okay. The next one, I may be mispronouncing here. Gentlemen, what does it mean when you're hovering schneef?
Means I'm getting wet. I have no Lou, do you know? I mean, you got me. I have no idea on any of these.
Hovering schneef.
Hovering schneef.
Is that from Esperanto? I've never heard that before.
Again, I'm going to guess there's somebody in our group that knows the answer to this one in particular. That is what, according to the Urban Dictionary, it means when you do cocaine.
Wow.
Okay, now I'm proud to say that on questions 4 and 5, I knew the answers to these questions. Although, you know, I'm not going to admit or say anything. But number 4, Barry, what does it mean when they say riding the white horse?
I would have thought that was cocaine, but I guess I'm probably wrong. But I would have gone with cocaine on that one.
Lou?
Yeah, I would say either cocaine or like China White, like heroin.
Aha! Lou coming through at the very end with the correct answer. Heroin.
Congrats, Lou.
I was going to say go with your Keith Richard or your Steven Tyler perhaps for the question. The answer there. Okay, now, gentlemen, I'm going to just wild guess that you're both going to know the answer to this one. Toking up. What would that mean, Barry? Do you have any idea?
I do. I will let Lou. That one, I know what it means. I'll let Lou. But Lou,
tell us
in California,
why you know that what that means, Barry.
I spent time in California. Lou knows.
Is
Lou
there
lives
anyone that was at the recent CWF Fan Fest that would know the answer to this question?
About 90% of us would know the would
any
know
mechanics
the answer.
From the Carolinas.
Okay.
Lou, tell the good folks what it means.
And I can say that. You know, I can say this with all the legal cover because I live in California.
That's true.
That would be a little bit of the herb.
Not a little bit of the bubbly, a little bit of the herb. Okay. So, okay, let's see here. Before I ask this question, I need to make sure. Okay. So, gentlemen, here again, a question. I'm going to guess this is the one that Lou bows out on. The act of eating your partner's asshole while lying on the beach is known as what specific type of rim job? Again, I want all you listening to remember, I'm listening to these questions with my daughter, people. Uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's got to be. So, ass-eating rim job on a beach, it would be the sandy beach.
Who was quite a worker for UWF back in the day.
Right, exactly.
Absolutely. I could drop in a plug for Pro Wrestling Spotlight then and now, if you want to hear more about Sandy Beach. I'll say unfiltered margarita.
Well, you're a little bit closer, Lou, because in fact, the answer, according to this study, is a salted rim job.
Oh.
Okay. So now we are at the last question. So you can, after this, you'll be done with your uncomfortable portion of the segment. So according to the adultfilmdistribution.com, the AFD.com, I think that's what it stands for, which of the following is not the title of a real pornographic film? Gentlemen, familiar with the term pornography, are you?
Yes. Yes.
Lou?
You do
live in California.
Yeah. I've heard it in certain circles. Yes. Okay, yes.
I've heard it, like walking through certain stores. Personally, of course, no experience whatsoever. So I'm going to give you the name of four different movies, and you have to tell me which one of these is a made-up title. Okay? Are we ready?
Let's do it.
All right.
Number one, How the Grinch Gaped Christmas. Number two, I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas on My Face. Number three, Load Before Christmas. And the fourth one, Splooged. Those are great titles. I think we
can all great titles. All right. So, Jeff, what was the third one again?
Okay. We have How the Grinch Gaped Christmas, I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas on My Face, Load Before Christmas, and Splooged.
I'm going with Load Before Christmas.
Okay. Lou, your guess?
Wow. I could just say there's a seminal through line in all of these titles.
I don't think we need to discuss seminal things, Lou.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to go with, seems all too clever, The Grinch Who Gaped Christmas.
Okay. Now, once again, I think in our group, based on things that I've read and heard, there may be one particular member who I don't want to mention who, based on prior work experience, would probably know the answer to this question, Barry.
That's true.
Yes.
That's true.
The correct answer, gentlemen, you're both wrong. Splooged was completely made up.
That is a great title. Yes. Exactly. That is great.
So, gentlemen, I want to thank you for playing adult trivia here on Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry. Okay, so we had so much fun doing that. It's something our folks that listen and our Facebook group enjoyed the adult trivia. Perhaps it's something we can address again in the future. Barry, what do you think?
I think so, too. And, Jeff, I have made a list of all those shows with the most nudity, and I'm going to go watch them all tonight. So, yes.
So, anyway, all right, my friend, you better ready for the go-home?
I think this is it.
Okay. So, folks, on behalf of our producer, Lou Kippelman, always there doing stellar work and joining us on the Adult Trivia this week, Barry. How much fun was that, getting into the mind of Lou Kippelman? I was a little worried there, by the way, going into the mind of Lou Kippelman. Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. And we will see you next week for episode 115. I will give one little spoiler, Barry. Not going to be next week, but within the next 2 to 3 weeks, Unsolved Mysteries
returns.
Boom! There you go, Barry. I know that I was excited. We will talk to you next week, folks.